July 3rd, 2017 meeting of the Astoria City Council. Roll call, Chief Johnston.
Councilor
Neville. Here.
Councilor Bronson.
Here.
Councilor Rice.
Here.
Councilor Jones.
Here.
Mayor Lanier.
Here. Thank you. Reports of councilors. Councilor Jones.
Good evening, Mayor. I'm just excited to be getting ready to celebrate my 57th Independence Day, this time for the first time as a tiny, minuscule cog in the great machinery of democracy. And to be doing so under the stars and stripes and not the Union Jack or the flag of Spain. So I'm very excited about tomorrow. Happy Independence Day to all of you.
Okay. Congratulations.
Councilor Price.
Yes. Happy, hello everyone, and happy 4th to you. And I have not been particularly busy in the past couple of weeks because I was in North Carolina. I escaped the heat for the humidity. But downtown has been just cracking. All these new businesses, particularly entrepreneurs, Moe's Chowder House has opened at the foot of 14th. I'm sure everybody's seen that. Noel Weber, owner of the former YMCA, got a grant from SHPO, $20,000 to do facade renovation. The Columbian previously had gotten one of about $60,000 for facade renovation. Jeremy and Nan Schoenwald opened Smokehouse Butcher Block in the El Rio Cafe down at, was that 9th and Astor? And Astoria got yet another accolade as one of the 10 most charming places ever on an obscure online blog, but that's cool. And other than that, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Councilor Brownson.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to report. The last couple of weeks have been pretty quiet. But happy 4th of July. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Well, I guess I'd be unpatriotic if I didn't say something about the 4th of July. So happy 4th of July. And I, too, am very proud to be participating in our democracy. I feel like our democracy is alive and well in local politics, and that's why it's my favorite. That's why I'm on City Council. And we're looking forward to the fireworks tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay. I have a thank you note to read to the council, and this is we donated $200 to the dinner that they put on every year at the Elks for the ships that go upriver to Fleet Week in Portland. And so this says, I would like to thank you for the generous cash donation of $200 that was used to fund the Astoria Fleet reception at the Astoria Elks Lodge that took place on June 7, 2017. Your generous donation allowed us to honor the officers and crew of the United States Navy guided missile cruiser USS Bunker Hill. The reception, which included a salmon dinner, provided a home away from home atmosphere for the visiting crew. The entertainment provided by the Maddox Dance Company and the Miss Clatsop County Scholarship Program title holders, along with the visits from the Astoria Regatta Court and Scandinavian Court, added to the mom, pop, and apple pie feeling of the reception. On behalf of the United States Navy, I would like to thank you again for your support of the fleet reception. Sincerely, Lou Miranda, Commander, United States Navy Reserve, Portland. So it's an event that they really seem to enjoy a lot. They get a big kick out of the local dancers and the, all the beauty pageant people who show up for these events. And so they were very grateful for that dinner. The other thing I just wanted to mention was the Astoria Music Festival, which, as usual, this year was wonderful. There were just some terrific performances, and we're very, very fortunate, I think, in this city to have a music festival of that caliber. So that was most enjoyable, and I'll add my wishes for a happy 4th of July.
Madam Mayor, I'm sorry, one more thing, if I may. I see that Frank Spence is here today. He comes regularly to the meetings, and he was, I just learned that he was sworn in today as a port commissioner and as president of the Port of Astoria, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any changes to the agenda?
Yes, there was a citizen request to remove item 5C from the agenda, consent agenda.
Okay. So it will become 6D then?
No, if you will just take a vote on the remainder of the consent agenda as well as another counselor's reminder, then we can take 5C.
Okay. Anyone on the council have another removal? Okay. Then could we have a motion to approve items 5A, B, and D?
I shall move that we approve items 5A, B, and D.
Second.
Roll call, Chief Ames.
Counselor Price?
Aye.
Counselor Nemeroff?
Aye.
Counselor Russell?
Aye.
Mayor Lurie?
Aye. Okay, and this is the Greensmith Agreement, item C.
So this is an item that through this next year's budget, council has designated funds for the care and maintenance of tourist-related properties that enhance the beauty of our community, and these are paid for through the use of Promote Astoria funds. And we have solicited quotes, and Greensmith Landscaping has provided a bid of $99,216 for the services identified in the memo. I would note that as a part of the contract, there was an attachment, which was the list of properties to be served, which was inadvertently left out of the agenda, but they were listed in the memo. Tonight's recommended that council approve the contract for $99,216 with Greensmith Landscaping, and George McCartan, who's in the audience, as the individual who requested this item, come on.
Okay.
Good evening, Your Honor, Madam President, members of the council. My name is George McCartan. I live at 490 Franklin Avenue. This is a contract for almost $100,000. And it involves many of the parks, or all of the parks. I didn't spend a lot of time going through all of them, but I was somewhat familiar with the Doughboy Monument. And I looked down the amount of time we spent there, the amount of money, and it comes down to the taking care of the Doughboy Monument. It will cost us $310 an hour. We'll be paying $310 an hour for that. And then the Astoria Riverwalk, that's even a little more expensive. That's going to cost us $539 an hour. I submit to you, having briefly surveyed the latest schedule for payment to our workers, that the good people of Astoria would be a little bit chagrined that this contract, when it comes down to the hourly amounts, when in fact for that amount we could probably hire at least two permanent employees to do this work, and possibly even three. Or maybe two permanent and one temporary. And they would be a little bit chagrined that we didn't do that, but went ahead and outsourced this item and this work. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to respond?
Sure. So this is an item that we carried over from last fiscal year. Where we are looking at using Promote Astoria funds to be able to improve the aesthetics at our visitor-related parks facilities. In the end, we could do this more inexpensively with city employees if we had the additional funds to be able to do so. And as you're aware, the council is looking at generating additional funds to be able to pay our park staff, part-time employees, more. Right now, Jonah, if I'm correct, how many people do we have mowing parks within the city presently?
Two.
And that's one full-time.
And then myself.
Right, and one part-time. That's because two part-time and yourself. And the difficulty is that our wages are not in keeping with being able to keep a full-time, part-time staff, full-line part-time staff. And this is a way right now that we're able to keep the level of service, which has become expected within our tourist-related facilities, and continue on this summer. And then if the city council is going to look at looking for other funding mechanisms to be able to provide for additional services, we could in the future look at bringing on other city employees to do this work. We're just right now in the meantime trying to keep our parks maintained the best we can with the funding sources that we've had in place.
Well, isn't what George is asking, though, could we use that $99,000 or however much it is to hire other people rather than paying green?
Could I make a comment here, too, please?
Go ahead.
So I realize that you just pointed out that we're paying $700 an hour looking at this paperwork, and I'm looking at this too because that kind of struck me as a little high, because basically all the hourly, it looks like $45 an hour is their basic price for doing work.
Right.
And down at the bottom of each page, they have a total fee, and then they've got the total hours, and that's what doesn't seem to add up, because if I take those total hours, then you come up with these high things. But if you take each individual line item, it works out to be $45 an hour right on down. So I don't know what he was doing with his total hours at the bottom of the sheet versus the total dollars, but
I think he left out the occurrences per year factor in the math.
It doesn't work in there, right?
Yeah.
So Jonah, can you comment to that?
Each week or the minimum, it's not a very easy way to break out the labor, unfortunately, but they're trying their best to balance how they're showing a bunch of different tasks basically grouped together on a single sheet for a single property. I believe that might be where the discrepancy is coming.
And then how many people are this isn't one person, this is a crew of X.
Correct. This is Greenstone Landscaping. Probably most people see their trucks around town. They've got quite a lot of workers. So as an example, regarding the surging waves, they typically probably have anywhere from 4 to 6, if not more, people, depending on the activity they're doing there, at a time per property. So that's a crew leader plus X number of laborers, and that person being supervised.
So it does come down to more or less the $45 per hour is what we're looking at. And so with regards to doing this in the future, it is correct. We could do it cheaper in-house. However, it's going to take a rejiggering of how we fund our parks department to be able to roll this whole thing out. If we don't continue with this contract now, these visitor-related parks facilities will now start going unmaintained. So the question is for council and is to understand if we are going to want to be able to continue the level of service that we've seen over the past year and continue the contract moving to this next fiscal year.
And again, just for clarification, it is where the money comes from. The Promote Astoria dollars, we cannot pay our parks department with them. So, but we can't subcontract for tourists related, and that's why we get to do it. And it does work out. It is a little bit more expensive, but it is still $45 an hour, not these like $400 or $500 an hour.
Not according to what you have your attachment to the contract. That's not according to the attachments.
Well, that's why, again, if you look at the attachment, and if you ignore the bottom total on each page and you take each individual line item, they all work out to be about $45 an hour. The way he did the totals here. He got the totals on the money right, but he didn't get the actual hours. You have to kind of multiply the occurrences in, and he didn't do that. So if you do that, you end up getting getting back to the $45 an hour. So
you're saying the attachments, the figures are wrong?
I'm saying that the figures on all the line items are correct, except for the bottom line on each page, which is just a total line.
Those are the totals.
That's right, except those hour totals are incorrect. If they're not the same as what you have above them. They may total out for that column, but he didn't figure in the occurrences of each one in that bottom line for the hours. So for instance, line item two, I'm on page 16, and I've got line item two here for mowing and trimming all turf areas at the 9th Street Park, and he's got 0.75 to 1 hour at 27 occurrences to be $911. So that's roughly high-end 27 hours. Well, that 27 hours did not translate to his total down at the bottom of the page, and that's where it looks screwy. But the hours and the fees are correct if you add in all the occurrences of each one of those hours in the line item. So again, take a look at it from that standpoint. Forget the bottom totals, take each line item, it all works out. It's just how he presented his estimate. Kind of looks screwy.
And then again, it's...
I know what you're looking at, exactly, and I...
Yeah. And then again, it's $45 per hour for the crew.
Yes. Per hour per, on the job.
For the crew, however many people.
So if it takes an hour to do the job, it's $45.
Right. But it's not per person. I mean, as far as I understand, I mean, the city could hire a person for $45 an hour, but one person, if you include the benefits and all of that. But this is a crew. That's doing everything in an hour.
Right.
It would take three people to do it, maybe.
In an hour. Probably.
And under the contract, they're using their equipment, right?
That's maintaining
their own equipment. So
that's
we're
correct.
Avoiding the wear and tear on our own equipment. The number of man hours that are typically required to maintain weed eaters, lawnmowers, brush hogs, things like that, we're avoiding all those costs as well.
And their liability.
Their liability insurance.
So I don't think we could do it cheaper, honestly.
Well, I'm going to support the services contract right now because I think there's an immediate need to maintain a level of services. And using the Promote Astoria Fund to maintain parks under our current system, as was mentioned, you know, we're not able to just put that into the parks fund and hire staff. But Mr. McCartan, I think that you do have a really good point, and it concerns me that our parks department runs on so many part-time workers, especially with the unemployment rate so low in Clatsop County. We have maintenance money, as I understand, that's available right now, but we're not able to hire as many part-time workers as we could because there just aren't workers to be had. So grass might be getting tall at the cemetery, and it's not because there's not funding to mow the cemetery, it's because we can't hire enough part-time workers because there's so much competition for service industry jobs. So I do think the Parks Department would be better off with a few more full-time employees with good jobs and good benefits. And one thing I've learned about the city, which is really difficult to comprehend from a private business standpoint, is that if we hire a full-time worker for $30,000 a year, cost the city double because of all the required benefits that we have to pay. And so private businesses don't have all the requirements that government does. And there's one more thing I'd like to talk about that's not related to this, but is related to item C, if you wouldn't mind,
okay.
Madam Mayor.
Right.
I don't know if we want to move on, but... Again, I am going to support the services contract, but one of the sites that will be maintained by outsourcing via Promote Astoria funds is People's Park for about $8,400 a year. And I don't want to forget the Scandinavian Heritage Association's offer to fundraise and enhance People's Park with... structure to honor the Scandinavian heritage in Astoria. And, you know, I can't help but, you know, wonder what kind of bid we could get in from Greensmith or other companies to maintain that. You know, one of the line items here is mowing and trimming. You know, that's the costliest item, over $3,000 a year. If there was more concrete there and less grass, you know, it seems like pressure washing a couple times a year would actually cost less. I just don't see how that could equate to an occurrence of 27 times per year of mowing and trimming. So I'd be really interested in seeing a bid on what it would take to maintain People's Park if the Scandinavian Heritage Association were to move forward with their plan for enhancements at the park. You know, I understand we weren't able to do that because our parks department is on overload, but if we're outsourcing the work anyway, you know, it seems like we could. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, Mr. City Manager.
We can look into that, though.
Thank you.
And just to be able to provide a little more clarification in response to Mr. McCartan's comments, you know, moving forward, you know, when we're going to be coming back to you at your next meeting with some revised methodologies for ways to be able to fund parks, to be able to focus on what's been referred to as the life raft scenario, to address some of these labor issues. We're also going to be coming to you with some maybe some new and different ways to be able to utilize Promote Astoria funds as well. And so what is before you tonight, and I'll tell you, there was actually some discussion about the timing of this item in response to what else is going to be happening with regards to the funding of the life raft scenario. However, to be able to keep consistency in moving forward this next year, it was my recommendation that we move forward now, because there's become an expectation in terms of how our visitor-related parks are maintained, and this right here is a way to be able to keep on until we make the change, more global change, within the Parks Department.
One thing that I've heard a lot of people say, how nice the roundabout looks, for instance, now that it's being kept up by Greensmith, and I know that they, when you get a whole crew in there, you can whip out a job pretty quickly. Having spent this last weekend pruning my own bushes, it takes a heck of a long time, and I would be very grateful for Greensmith. Anyway, I think we can be very proud of what what the company is doing in our parks at this point. So let's see. We need a motion on this item.
I would move the council approve the landscape services contract for tourist-related sites with Greensmith Landscaping LLC.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. Okay, our first regular agenda item is the Advance Astoria.
A public hearing was held on June 19th before the City Council, and a first reading was held with regards to adoption of the Comprehensive Plan Amendment for the Advance Astoria Economic Development Strategy. I would note that the final Economic Development Strategy document, which included some cleanup of minor typos and formatting adjustments, was included with your packet. If the council is in agreement, there'd be an order for the council to hold a second reading of the ordinance and then have a vote to adopt the ordinance.
Okay. Anybody ready? Okay. Go ahead.
Well, actually, we would need to have a request from the mayor to have a first reading.
Second reading.
Second.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Ms. Brooks, do you have the second reading? Okay, now I'll call for action.
I move the council adopt the findings and conclusions contained in the staff report and approve amendment request A17-01 to the development code and adopt the ordinance.
I'll second.
Any discussion by the council? Okay, we need a roll call vote then. Jonah, you want to call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. The city council's ruling may be appealed by any person withstanding by filing a notice of intent to appeal with the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, LUBA, within 21 days after the city council has made its decision. If an appeal is not filed with LUBA within the 21-day period, the decision of the city council shall be final. Item B.
Item B is an item that comes before you after the beginning of each new fiscal year. And we have now moved into the next fiscal year, starting on July 1st. And we have a salary resolution, which includes the amounts of compensation for our employees. Whenever there are changes, the salary resolution is brought before you for consideration. This proposed resolution implements changes retroactive to July 1st. And first of all, there is within the public safety employee group or union, there's a negotiated 1.5% wage adjustment. For the fire employee group, a 2.5% wage adjustment. And for management and confidential employees, that's for the non-union employees, there was a budgeted 2.5% adjustment. And lastly, for our part-time employees, there are adjustments that are made for increases due to Oregon minimum wage. So there are no changes at this point in time to the Public Works and General Parks employee groups as their contracts are currently under negotiation. It's recommended tonight that council adopt the salary resolution as presented.
Questions, comments?
Yes, thank you. Mr. City Manager, I noticed that on some of the categories, the date is effective July 1, 2016, and some 2017. Does that matter?
Well, is it for which employee group are you looking
well,
at?
Well, General Parks Union.
Right, because that one.
I know that. Let's see, which else was the other one? Just Police Sworn Management, Public Works, and...
Would it be that those aren't being adjusted?
I think that's it. So they're not being adjusted, so you keep the effective date?
So the police sworn, those are the management that followed what the union amounts were. They were retroactive to the beginning of 2016.
Oh.
And public works and general parks are being negotiated, so those remain at 2016.
Okay.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay. Could we have a motion then?
I move that we adopt the salary resolution as presented.
A second.
Okay, we need a roll call vote on this one. Ms. Brooks?
Councilor Nimmo?
Aye.
Councilor Brown? Aye.
Councilor Price?
Aye.
Councilor Jones?
Aye.
Mayor Lanier?
Aye. Thank you. Item C.
Item C is consideration of a liquor license for the Turtle Rock Cellars. And this one has been filed by Donna Franks. And they are doing business as the Suwakini Winery. And this is an application for a new outlet for a winery. The site is located at 240 10th Street in downtown. And our departments, so which review our liquor licenses, have reviewed it, and no objections were noted. It's recommended that council consider this application.
Okay. Any comments, or do you want to make a motion?
My husband owns Cervecia Gratis, doing business as Fort George Brewery, so I would declare a potential conflict of interest, but these aren't clients of ours, so it's not a direct conflict.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to approve the liquor license application from Turtle Rock Cellars Incorporated, doing business as Suwakini Winery.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. That concludes our regular agenda, so if you have comments that you want to make at this time, please come forward, state your name and address.
Good
in case you really want to.
Okay.
Is this all one copy?
There are multiple copies of different things. I'll explain what they are. So the short piece is like primer of what I'm going to address tonight. And then I gave Brett a big pile of information in case you want the extended dance next. my name is Dan Sears. I'm the conservation director with Columbia Riverkeeper. 2 years ago, the city council passed a resolution in opposition to liquefied natural gas export in the Columbia River estuary. That statement resonated statewide and caught the attention of people throughout the region. It kind of marked this area as being a place where people fight for the health of the river. I'm here today to talk about something that's different, and it's the, now that LNG's off the map, it keeps us up at night, it's Columbia Riverkeeper, and that's oil by rail. The largest oil by rail terminal in North America is proposed just upstream at the Port of Vancouver. That would involve shipping 360,000 barrels of oil a day down Columbia River. The reason why this is important for Astoria is that studies looking at this terminal have concluded that it would dramatically increase the risk of oil spills in the Columbia River estuary, both from the trains that would be bringing the oil into the terminal and the vessels going downstream. It would be 5 loaded mile-long trains a day. This is a new thing for the United States. We haven't moved oil by train in this volume ever before. In 2012, it started to ramp up. In 2013, we started to see trains derail. In 2016, we saw a train derail in Mosier, a town along the Columbia River. That relatively small derailment, actually, by comparison to some of the others, did release oil in the Columbia River, but it was a small taste of what could happen in the Columbia River estuary. Thankfully, the Washington Attorney General's office decided to look this issue squarely in the face and say, what would happen if a major oil spill happened as a result of that oil train terminal in Vancouver? And they concluded that there would be tens of millions, potentially more than $1 billion in losses in the Columbia River estuary from impacts to the fishery, impacts to businesses that support the fishery, both commercial and recreational. They did not look at the Native American fishery in the Columbia River. And they looked at the potential for disruptions in river traffic. So putting all this together, what you see is that the Columbia River estuary has as much at stake with the decision happening, this huge oil terminal in Vancouver, than much of the rest of the region. Most of the attention around the oil by rail issue has, for good reason, been focused on the trains themselves because they derailed and sort of spectacularly burned throughout the United States. We've seen over a dozen derailments. What's really been lost in this discussion is the impact of the Columbia River estuary, the huge oil spill risk that people down here are facing, and what that could do to the economy of Astoria and other communities like it. So there are many communities that have weighed in on this issue, including Portland. Vancouver has opposed the oil terminal proposed in Vancouver. That's important to note. And I'm along with several folks from Astoria to ask that the city of Astoria consider taking a resolution on this issue, which has such a huge potential impact on the Columbia River estuary. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
I'm Pamela Hess McDonald, 1561 Exchange Street. I've already sent you a bunch of scientific information, so I'm going to tell you something about how I feel. I love this city. It's unique in its mix of people, architecture, and its culture, creativity, and oddities. Fisher Poets, Festival of the Dark Arts, and Liberty Theater offerings. The growth of local food providers, farmers, fishermen, and shellfish growers, bakers, and butchers, the progressive involvement of the Clatsop Community College, and there's care with which the city watershed is maintained, and public works attempts and successes in physically running a city with ancient infrastructure. I've lived a lot of places, and this is my favorite. I know I'm not the only person who feels this way, and God, I feel so emotional about this. And so I've worked to give you the science and the facts about this upstream threat, the Tesoro Oil Terminal, because I don't want this charming place to be ruined by the rank smell of oil on the rocks by the riverwalk, or volunteers trying to clean off sea lions, cormorants, and buffleheads. Fishing would have its last gasp, and so would bye-bye shellfish, Would the tourists still visit? I've been in Barrow at an oil spill. I know how it smells. Here, one of the West's most relentless rivers makes the wilderness of an entire ocean, and here, a community with grit and backbone make that meeting work. As a council, you have the opportunity to secure the safety of the city by adopting a resolution in opposition to the Tesoro oil terminal upriver, showing your constituents that we belong to a greater vision, realizing we have a responsibility to our region because our region does so much good for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Oops, sorry. Well, if you say my name is not Grace. Roger Rocca, 362 Wayne Street, Astoria. Kathleen Zunkel from Morrison and I are co-facilitators for a group called CREATE, the Columbia River Estuary Action Team. Facilitator just means that we organize the monthly meetings, send out information to the mailing list, maintain the website, we have no actual authority. CREATE is made up largely of veterans from the 12-year-long battle against LNG terminals on the lower Columbia River, plus other citizens who have joined us since. We are affiliated with Columbia River Keeper and with the National Water Keeper Alliance. In the course of a long fight against LNG, we learned a lot about the Columbia River estuary. Afterwards, we decided that what we had learned about this unique place and about citizen activism should not go to waste. So we formed CREATE to try to continue to protect the estuary against the new threats that were sure to come, and they have. From here, we can see the estuary as a beautiful and sometimes tempestuous asset that supports fishing, recreation, transportation, tourism, and some of the most beautiful sunsets on the planet. Salmon smolt coming downriver from spawning streams or from the Columbia see the estuary as a rich and nourishing place to grow into young adult salmon before swimming out into the ocean and later returning to continue the cycle of life. Sturgeon, aquatic animals, birds, and other creatures also see the estuary as a rich and pure place to support their lives. The fossil fuel projects proposed upriver see it merely as a pipe to move their dinosaur products to foreign markets. The study Dan referred to, done for the state of Washington, estimates monetary damage from a major oil spill at more than $1 billion, with terrible losses to wildlife, to local businesses, and additional harm to the ocean off the river's mouth. You can find that complete study, by the way, in the June 22nd entry on the CREATE website, which is at create-columbia.com. There is compelling reason, we believe, for the city of Astoria to join with Portland, Seattle, Spokane, and other cities that have already acted in standing as a green wall against the huge fossil fuel projects on the Columbia. Your action can help influence decisions that are made in both states. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Lemire, Astoria City Council. I'm Jan Mitchell. I live at 362 Duane. And I also want to speak to this issue. It is basic. Anything that happens to the river upstream happens to us. We have had memorable examples of what this bill can do to local and regional economies. Our community is inexorably tied to the health and safety of the Columbia River and to our quality of life. We cannot control all the things that could happen, but we can act to limit some dangers. We would like to come back to you in a future meeting to ask the City of Astoria to join Portland, Spokane, and Seattle, and now I also Vancouver, in taking a stand against the expansion of oil trades along the river, which ultimately use the Columbia as a fossil fuel highway to other countries. We aren't even talking about the methane plant in Tawama or the coal terminal at Longview, but we're focusing just on oil at this point. We will work with staff to create a resolution that you can use as a first step. Thank you.
I have a question of somebody from Riverkeeper. Are you working with Crest?
Crest has not submitted comments on this issue yet. That's a great, question. This, to be really blunt, most of the focus on this entire issue is that Vancouver and off-rail.
Okay.
Trains have been the focus. Everyone's been so worried about the trains derailing and annihilating downtown Vancouver. And, you know, and then after the merger, it was even more so. So it, the Washington Attorney General's report, and I gave you just the executive summary, that was the first attempt to really look at what would happen downstream, along with the draft environmental impact statement. And those two documents, if you read them together, definitely paint a fairly dire picture. And so that's why we're here. Particularly, it's a great request for us to reach out to the press.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'd appreciate if you did work with them. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I ask a question too? Do you know when the Tesoro project came up? How long ago it was proposed?
So, okay. We probably would have been here sooner if you weren't all dealing with the LNG problem. Since that went under in 2016, and then the derailment happened shortly thereafter, a lot of the focus upstream went from LNG to just big oil issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. I was just wondering because on your information sheet here, it says the City of Vancouver's resolution was in 2014, and so I was wondering if that was preemptive or if it was in response to this specific proposal.
It was in response. Okay. Initially, the City of Vancouver didn't oppose the project. It was a series of really spectacular oil train derailments that happened between 2013 and 2014. It was basically a year of every other month one of these things going off and exploding.
What difference do you think it would make if the City of Astoria were to pass such a resolution?
I think it makes a huge difference for the perception of the issue because everyone is thinking about the problem stopping at Vancouver and not realizing that what we're putting at risk is the decades of work to protect and restore the Columbia River Estuary. So the Crest suggestion is a really good one. All of that work is thrown out the window if we see a major oil spill like what's been talked about in these reports. You know, oil train carries 3 million gallons. An oil tanker, I can't speak to this, carries much more. And the state of Washington looked at an 8 million gallon spill from the Columbia River. And that's where these numbers ranging from, you know, 100 million to over a billion will come from. And I'm sure you know more than all of us in mind about this issue. And so we're looking at this and just realizing that as when your decision, Governor Inslee is going to make a call on this sometime in 2017 or early 2018. He hasn't heard from the river yet. That's, we think that's a real gap in the conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, you might want to stay up there just in case anybody else on the council has a question or comment.
Well, I'll ask a quick question. How much more, with that amount of oil being put on ships, how much more ship traffic is that going to? I mean, what's going to be? How many ships are we going to have a week coming up here for that? One, two, ten?
It would be a loaded vessel every day going over the bar.
Okay.
So that's the for oil tanker traffic. They concluded that would be something like a 230% increase, and that was from the draft environmental impact statement released by the City of Washington. So a major, major increase in oil tanker traffic.
And are these oil tankers affected or by Homeland Security in any way? I mean, are they going to create, does it create additional presence over what they do now? I mean, early on, I mean, LNG, it was a big deal, it was a big discussion, and there was a lot of reaction in general with the Coast Guard being much more protective of, like, cruise ships and whatnot, but that's all kind of found its level. Is that anticipated to change or no?
I don't think it's talked about as a major issue in disrupting traffic on the Columbia River. The State of Washington is continuing to study the impact on river traffic. The reports I provided actually look at what would happen if some oil spill. Then obviously traffic would be impacted. But I'm not aware that they in statute they require some security zones, but I don't think it carries the same big impact that LNG.
I'd just like to note that it's been interesting since I've become a city councilor that I get regular emails from my friend Jack Girard at the American Petroleum Institute, and he says that the United States leads the world in production and refining of natural gas and oil, and our status as a global energy leader presents major opportunities for economic growth and job creation, including
infrastructure development. So I suppose this is all part of that. Generally, I believe, actually, I had to pull this out of my trash, but just to let you know that there certainly was, we're quick to start lobbying us right off the bat. I thought it was interesting.
And we did lift the oil export ban a couple of years ago, and so we are now able to export raw crude overseas. That's what we're aware
of. Thank you.
Okay. Dan, where does this oil come from mostly, and where is it going now?
It comes from two sort of opposite extremes of the oil spectrum. So most of the oil is expected to come from North Dakota, from the Bakken Formation. That oil is very light, very volatile. The Department of Ecology in Washington says it behaves, quote unquote, like gasoline. So that's the stuff you see when trains derail, sort of spectacularly catching fire, and that's what happened in Mosher. The other extreme, the facility is able to handle oil that's very dense, very thick, from diluted bitumen from tar sands. So they're building tanks that have heating coils in them to store and ship potentially large quantities of tar sands oil. That presents the opposite problem. The stuff is so thick and so heavy, when it spills and begins to degrade, it can actually sink in a river system, making it extremely difficult to clean up. And they've experienced this in the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, where a pipeline, Enbridge pipeline, ruptured. And they thought they had the stuff boomed, and then started to sink. And they escaped their booming and did billions of dollars damage.
And where is it going now? If the Vancouver terminal isn't built, where is it going now, for instance, and where would it go?
Right now we have pipelines that move most of the oil we use in the region, and the Olympic pipeline goes north and south. That's the main distribution system in Portland metro area. The trains we see now that are moving are going to relatively small facilities. The train that drilled in Mosher was going to Tacoma. So we basically ship maybe a train a week. This facility would move five trains a day, up to five trains a day. And so we think that the question of, you know, our oil use is a little bit like natural gas and LNG exports, a little bit of a red herring, where the size of this facility and its purpose to ship oil down the river in very large quantities kind of makes what we do here a little bit irrelevant. If it doesn't ship through the oil terminal, presumably some of that stuff stays in the ground and doesn't go.
Right. Is this oil for export or domestic use?
Both. So about 60,000 barrels, the 360,000 barrels are committed to a West Coast refinery from Tesoro. So that's the only, there's loose the unit. So that could go anywhere from Alaska to Los Angeles, and refineries all the way up the Netflix coast. Including the state of Washington. They're not actually expecting to send it to Washington. They're most likely to send it to their LA refineries. That leaves 300,000 barrels a day that could go anywhere in the world. That's uncommitted. And with the oil export ban no longer being in effect, we sit on the border of the Pacific Rim.
Thank you.
So your request then is that you would bring a resolution to us and working with staff?
It would be at the direction of the mayor.
The mayor would like the council to weigh in on this. Do you wish to have a resolution on this topic presented?
I would like to have a resolution to consider.
I agree.
I'm compelled to have a resolution to consider. I've heard from some excellent people on one side of the issue tonight. I haven't been compelled by anyone on the other side, so I'd certainly like to consider a resolution.
I'd certainly consider a resolution as well. I do, have a few thoughts. The gentleman referred to my background, I guess, as the previous captain of the port. A couple issues, I guess, the river traffic. I don't know what last year's numbers are, but during the time I was in the Coast Guard here, river traffic was anywhere from 1,500 ships a year to 2,300 to 2,400 ships a year. Most of them make a round trip, so just, 3,000 transits up to a little over 4,000 transits a year. Largely, as you know, the grain ships that are out there, a few cruise ships, but we have a lot of hazardous products that are transported on the river now and have been since at least World War II. We have petroleum products moving on the river, if not daily, certainly five times a week. The ATBs that currently aren't moving crude out, but as you know, over the past few years have been moving crude out the river from the Clatskanie area, either shipped up north to Cherry Point, Washington, the refineries, or down to the Bay Area for the California refineries. We've got refined petroleum products that move up the river on ATBs practically every day because our Pacific Northwest region needs refined petroleum products to function for its economy and its industry to function. And the alternative, of course, is they'd be moving on the highways. I frankly don't like petroleum products sitting next to me when I'm on a highway going 70 miles an hour. Pipelines have their issues, as you've alluded to. So I think it's a complex issue. I mean, petroleum products moving on the river, it's easy to say that's just real black and white, it's bad. But I think you have to compare it to the alternatives. It moves safely on the river now. It's probably worth noting that any petroleum products that are moved and other chemical products have pretty stringent post-OPA 90 regulations for tanker construction. I frankly, as captain of the port, had a lot of sleepless nights on this river with 2 a.m. calls for vessels losing propulsion. And what worried me the most in terms of an ecological problem on the river was never a petroleum tanker, it was those grain ships, because those grain ships, they all have about 100,000 gallons of bunker fuel in them, and they're not double-hulled tankers, and a lot of them are dogs. It's the grain business, they operate on very small margins, like 1% margins, and so some of those grain ships sitting out there are real pieces of work, and a lot of times they'd be delayed on our river because our inspectors find so many problems with them. I was much more concerned about a petroleum spill from a grain ship, frankly, than from an oil tanker. And I would just note the Coast Guard, as well as both the Washington and states of Washington and Oregon, have some pretty strict regulatory regimes in place for inspections, say both from a safety and a security standpoint, inspections of these, all the commercial ships that travel on our river, but certainly more stringent on the chemical tankers. And again, the other products, I mean, anhydrous ammonia, we've got about six anhydrous ammonia ships a year that pass under the Medgar Bridge. I'd frankly be a lot more worried about that than petroleum products as well. A couple times a year, as you know, we have nuclear waste being moved up to Hanford as well. So the river is a busy maritime. It's a highway. Okay, it's a place of beauty and natural resources and fish and sea lions, and it's also a highway, and it has been ever since before the first white people came here. It was a commercial highway, and it continues to be. I'm very respectful of the work that you're doing, bringing this to our attention, and doing whatever you can to protect the safety and environmental health of our river. And I want to protect the environmental health of our river. But just based on my professional background in the Coast Guard, I'm not lined up to go automatically thinking that petroleum shipments on the river are necessarily a bad thing. I want to look very closely, not only at the EIS, and I haven't read it yet, but also at, you know, the current state of the Coast Guard's regulatory regime on commercial tankers. They're all inspected, obviously, commercial tankers, and where the relative risks are, and what do the bar pilots have to say about it, and the river pilots that are bringing the ships from, would bring the ships from Vancouver to Astoria, and the bar pilots that would take them across the bar. So I think it's, you know, it's something we need to look at. But it's complicated.
Yeah, and I would offer just as an addition to that is the thing that's kind of leapfrogged this issue out there has been the trains. I mean, the trains have demonstrated their ability to fail over and over and over. If you get one of those bullet Bonneville, no matter how good the shipping is on the river, you know, you have, and that's actually what prompted the Longshore Union in Vancouver, which probably worked the trouble. They came out in opposition to it because they didn't want to work in the loop of trains, you know. And so, as you think about the spill risk, that's another big factor. Is those trains barreling through 3 million gallons each down the Hunt River? That's the new part. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Then it seems like the majority of the council would like you to work with Riverkeeper to. Work on a resolution.
Right. I mean, in terms of the policy itself, you know, I will bring forward something that's, you know, proposed from Riverkeeper and put it in a more of a format and, you know, work with our city attorney on reviewing this. But as to implementation, this is purely a policy matter on behalf of the city council and not a situation where
me as a professional city manager has anything to be able to weigh in on with regards to what policy you may wish to take, but we'll be able to facilitate bringing something forward to you. I would ask that we not put this on the next city council agenda, and if we can, because we have the whole parks funding issue, which I'm anticipating is going to be quite an issue of discussion, and the meeting could be have other items as well. So maybe if we were able to focus on the first meeting in August as something.
That's still very timely.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you all who spoke. Appreciate all your comments.
One more.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Frank Spence. I live at 5169 Birch Street in Alderbrook, Astoria. And as of 2 o'clock this afternoon, I had the honor of being elected president of the Port of Astoria Commission.
Congratulations.
I come before you really as my first official presentation to reflect on utilize my personal relationship that I've had with this council and certainly with the staff in the past. Having served on your planning commission, I became involved deeply in your community. In the other organization's participation, I always worked for the betterment of Astoria and the area. Now, wearing another hat, I am looking forward to a new era of cooperation and partnership with the city. You have just passed a great comprehensive five-year vision plan called Advance Astoria. I've been very impressed by the quality of it, and as such, I have ordered copies to be given to each of my commissioners as a guide. The port will begin working on its vision statement also. As you know, within the Advance Astoria study, two of the five major areas of concern and future development affect the Port Commission, and that is the maritime industry and the fishing processing plants. These are part of the lifeline of this community and certainly of the port. I'm very optimistic in moving forward and working with the city. I reflect also on my 4 years of attending council meetings that I've only ever seen one court commissioner attend this council meeting over the years. I look at it as very important to keep open channels of communication between all of the elected bodies, be it the city council, county commission, and it is extremely important for all of us to work together. And in closing, I guess, as a court commissioner, I have to go to the old cliche that a rising tide raises all boats at the same time, and we all win, and that's the name of the game.
Thank you, Frank. Anyone else? Any other comments? Okay, if not, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for coming.